Welcome to the March 14th, 2024 episode of Blood Podcast, your source for innovative ideas and cutting-edge information. Our topics are based on articles published in Blood, a journal of the American Society of Hematology. Today, we'll learn more about rare, relapse-initiating stem cells in patients with MDS or AML in complete remission post-transplantation. Discuss the role of interferon alpha in erythropoiesis in sickle cell disease, and learn more about how TNF-alpha promotes clonal dominance of KIT D816V-positive cells in mastocytosis. We first examine data in the Blood article entitled Identification and Surveillance of Rare Relapse-Initiating Stem Cells During Complete Remission Post-Transplantation by Marius Dimitriou from Karolinska Institute in Solna, Sweden, and colleagues. Myelodysplastic syndromes and related myeloid malignancies have an overall dismal prognosis, with a relapse rate of more than 30% after allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. Most of these relapses occur within a year, although late relapses are not rare, some occurring more than 10 years post-transplantation. The relapse mechanism is believed to involve rare cancer stem cells escaping pre-transplantation conditioning and post-transplantation graft versus leukemia effect. However, the identity of relapse-initiating cells post-transplantation remains to be established. The lack of highly sensitive methods capable of predicting relapse in the early post-transplant phase has also significantly hampered the development of new treatments for MDS patients who relapse after allo-HSCT. Although the detection of minimal residual disease, or MRD, during complete remission is an important predictor of survival in patients with acute myeloid leukemia, it is not yet a routine part of the management of patients with MDS. Platforms used to assess MRD in MDS and AML include sequencing-based tracking of recurrent mutations and flow cytometry tracking of aberrant cell surface phenotypes. A recent retrospective study of MDS patients found that the detection of oncogenic mutations in bone marrow after allo-HSCT was associated with a higher risk of disease progression. However, the same study showed that 20% of patients without detectable MRD after allo-HSCT ultimately progressed, while 30% of patients with detectable MRD did not progress. These findings challenge the sensitivity of currently available approaches for MRD detection. The purpose of the current study was to compare the sensitivity of MRD detection using flow cytometry-purified HSPCs with that of MRD detection using unfractionated mononuclear cells, which is the current standard. The retrospective study included a total of 29 patients, 16 patients with relapses, and 13 patients with a continuous complete response without signs of recurring MDS or AML 66 months or longer post-allo-HSCT. Combined flow cytometric cell sorting and mutational screening for the persistence of rare, relapse-initiating stem cells was performed in bone marrow at multiple time points post-transplantation. Recurrent somatic mutations in patient samples were identified by targeted DNA sequencing of genomic DNA from bone marrow mononuclear cells. MRD was assessed by digital droplet PCR using patient-specific single nucleotide polymorphisms. In the 16 patients who relapsed, minimal residual disease was observed in all flow cytometry-sorted HSPCs, but only in 9 of 16 bone mononuclear cell samples. MRD detection in HSPCs consistently preceded that in mononuclear cells across multiple sequential samples, with an average lead time of 10 months. Moreover, variant allele frequency of oncogenes was higher in HSPCs by 97-fold on average, compared to mononuclear cells. In contrast, HSPCs remained negative in all 13 patients in long-term continuous complete response. Interestingly, the authors were able to demonstrate that in patients who had complete responses after allo-HSCT, distinct patterns of HSPC clonality were correlated with the MDS cellular architecture. Among the different HSPC populations analyzed, HSCs, multipotent progenitors, lymphoid-primed multipotent progenitors, and granulocyte-monocyte progenitors were more frequently clonally involved than other bone marrow populations and had the highest variant allele frequencies. However, because of the limited number of samples, the authors could not evaluate the implication of detecting MRD in HSPCs from patients whose disease did not progress after allo-HSCT. The authors concluded that the identification of relapse-initiating cancer stem cells and mutational MRD screening for their persistence enhances MRD sensitivity and earlier prediction of relapse after allogeneic stem cell transplantation. In an accompanying commentary, Juan José Rodríguez Sevilla and Simona Colla from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, note that the study by Dimitriou and collaborators demonstrates that mutational screening for malignant HSPCs that persist after allo-HSCT improves the sensitivity of MRD detection and allows earlier prediction of relapse in patients with myeloid malignancies. However, they also note that further characterization of these relapse-driving HSPCs could elucidate how these cells selectively evade pre-transplant conditioning regimens and post-transplant graft versus leukemia effects. These insights are important for the development of novel therapeutic approaches aimed at preventing recurrence after allo-HSCT. In addition, prospective studies on larger cohorts of patients are still needed to evaluate whether MRD detection in HSPCs predicts disease relapse more reliably than MRD detection in unfractionated bone marrow cells. To improve our capability to assess the risk of progression, it will be important to consider the type of genomically defined MDS-specific subtypes, the presence or absence of higher-risk genomic alterations, the type of allo-HSCT treatment, and other clinical variables. Finally, larger prospective studies are also needed to assess the impact of different approaches for MRD detection in the development of a more robust and reliable predictive model for early intervention to prevent the overtreating of patients who may not later experience relapse. Next up, we'll discuss the findings from the Blood article entitled "Hemolysis-Driven Interferon Alpha Production Impairs Erythropoiesis by Negatively Regulating EPO Signaling in Sickle Cell Disease" by Yongshui Han from the New York Blood Center in New York and colleagues. Erythropoiesis is a continuous process with 8 developmental stages by which hematopoietic stem cells proliferate, differentiate, and produce mature erythrocytes. Disruption of this physiologic process is a characteristic of many human hematological disorders, including myelodysplastic syndromes, Diamond-Blackfan anemia, and congenital dyserythropoietic anemia. Disordered erythropoiesis has also been reported in thalassemia and sickle cell disease. However, very little is known about the mechanisms that lead to disordered erythropoiesis in sickle cell disease in particular. Peripheral hemolysis in sickle cell anemia is believed to be a consequence of the polymerization of deoxygenated sickle hemoglobin, giving rise to repeated sickle erythrocyte sickling and unsickling, increased erythrocyte fragility, and oxidative stress. Associated intravascular hemolysis releases cell-free heme that contributes to decreased nitric oxide bioavailability and promotes the production of inflammatory cytokines, such as interleukin-6, placental growth factor, and endothelin-1. This, in turn, leads to disease-associated vaso-occlusion, pulmonary hypertension, and organ damage. The purpose of the current study was to compare erythropoiesis in murine models of sickle cell disease, beta thalassemia, and control mice. Both sickle cell and thalassemic mice had elevated levels of serum erythropoietin, related to chronic anemia. However, the beta thalassemia mice exhibited a 2- to 3-fold increase in bone marrow erythropoietic activity with increased erythroblasts and erythroid colony-forming ability compared to normal mice. However, in sickle cell mice, erythropoietic activity was only increased by 40% despite similar levels of erythropoietin. The authors further demonstrate that the colony-forming ability of sickle cell erythroid progenitors was decreased and erythropoietin-erythropoietin receptor signaling was impaired in sickle cell erythroid cells. Moreover, sickle cell mice exhibited reduced responses to EPO administration, as well as to endogenous EPO. Injecting control mice with red cell lysates, or hemin, mimicking the hemolysis of sickle cell disease, led to suppression of erythropoiesis and reduced erythropoietin-erythropoietin receptor signaling, indicating that hemolysis can contribute to the impaired erythropoiesis in sickle cell disease. Interestingly, the authors found that STAT5 phosphorylation, a downstream target of the EPO receptor, was reduced in sickle cell progenitor cells. In vitro treatment with hemin did not affect STAT5 phosphorylation, suggesting that hemin-induced erythropoiesis suppression in vivo occurs via an indirect mechanism. In contrast, treatment with interferon alpha led to suppression of mouse bone marrow erythropoiesis in vivo and human erythropoiesis in vitro, as well as inhibition of STAT5 phosphorylation. In sickle erythroid cells, interferon alpha receptor 1 signaling was activated, and the expression of CISH, a negative regulator of erythropoietin-erythropoietin receptor signaling, was increased. CISH deletion in human erythroblasts partially rescued interferon-mediated impairment of cell growth and erythropoietin receptor signaling. Knocking out interferon alpha receptor 1 in sickle mice rescued the defective bone marrow erythropoiesis and improved erythropoietin-erythropoietin receptor signaling. The authors concluded that their findings identify an unexpected effect of hemolysis on the impaired erythropoiesis in sickle cell disease through inhibition of erythropoietin-erythropoietin receptor signaling via a heme interferon alpha CISH axis. In an accompanying commentary, Constance T. Noguchi from the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, notes that the study by Han and collaborators provides a mechanistic understanding of the impaired erythropoietic response to endogenous erythropoietin and relates to the higher erythropoietin dose required for treatment of anemia in sickle cell disease compared with patients with chronic kidney disease. The authors identify the heme interferon alpha CISH axis as a contributing factor to the impaired erythropoietic response in sickle cell mice that may also relate to anemia of chronic disease and erythropoietin resistance, but will require further validation in human trials. Noguchi adds that these results are especially timely, considering the increasing availability of hypoxia-inducible factor prolyl hydroxylase inhibitors that increase the production of endogenous erythropoietin, and suggests the potential necessity to increase the dosage for the treatment of anemia in patients with sickle cell disease. Beyond therapeutic strategies that focus on hemolysis and/or deoxygenated sickle hemoglobin polymerization, these latest findings raise hope for alternative approaches, such as targeting the heme-induced inflammatory response, including interferon signaling or induction of CISH. Such approaches may also extend to the relative erythropoietin resistance in other disease states, including anemia of chronic disease. In the final part of today's podcast, we will review an article in Blood entitled TNF-alpha promotes clonal dominance of KIT D816V positive cells in mastocytosis, role of survivin, and impact on prognosis by Georg Greiner from the Medical University of Vienna, Austria, and colleagues. Systemic mastocytosis is a heterogeneous mast cell disease characterized by the expansion and accumulation of neoplastic mast cells. It includes a range of presentations, from indolent variants to aggressive subtypes with poor survival. Most patients with systemic mastocytosis, irrespective of the subtype, harbor the activating KIT D816V mutation. Although the majority of patients have an indolent form of the disease and suffer from mast cell mediator symptoms affecting different organs, those with advanced forms of systemic mastocytosis develop organ damage and have a much worse prognosis. They are typically treated with tyrosine kinase inhibitors that affect KIT D816V, but the only curative treatment is an allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell transplant. KIT D816V is a gain-of-function mutation that affects many important functions in mast cells and leads to constitutive activation of the tyrosine kinase activity of cell surface receptor KIT, independently of its ligand stem cell factor. Mutant cells exhibit increased migration and enhanced cytokine production and release, which is associated with disease progression. However, the exact role of altered cytokine production remains elusive. In their previous study on KIT D816V expressing cell lines, the authors demonstrated that this mutant promotes the expression of tumor necrosis factor alpha in neoplastic cells. TNF-alpha is a pro-apoptotic and anti-proliferative cytokine and a well-defined mediator of inflammation. It is produced by various cell types, including mast cells, macrophages, monocytes, T cells, and eosinophils. The goal of the current study was to analyze the mechanisms of expression and secretion of TNF in KIT D816V positive neoplastic mast cells and understand the contribution of TNF to disease progression in patients with systemic mastocytosis. Understanding the contribution of different cytokines to the pathophysiology of systemic mastocytosis can provide a better understanding of the disease mechanism and aid in the identification of new therapeutic targets. Knockdown experiments and CRISPR-Cas9 gene knockout experiments were performed according to previously described protocols, using mastocytosis cell lines with mutant KIT. TNF secretion was evaluated by ELISA to select knockout clones. TNF messenger RNA expression was measured by QRT-PCR. The expression of NF-kappa-B1, MAP2K1, BIRC5, and BCL2-like protein 1 was measured by immunoblotting, while the expression of TNFR1 and TNFR2 on mast cells was measured by flow cytometry. Animal experiments were conducted in NSG mice injected with ROSA KIT D816V cells with or without TNF knockout. The findings revealed that KIT D816V positive increases the expression and secretion of TNF. TNF expression in neoplastic mast cells was reduced by kinase inhibitors that block KIT D816V, including mitostaurin and avapritinib. Similarly, the knockdown of KIT, or targeting the downstream signaling cascade of MAPK and NF-kappa-B signaling, reduced the level of TNF expression. Additional experiments revealed that TNF reduces colony formation of human bone marrow cells, while KIT D816V-positive cells are less susceptible than normal cells to TNF-mediated clonal suppression. In line with these findings, knockout of TNF in neoplastic mast cells prolonged the survival and reduced myelosuppression in a murine xenotransplantation model. Mechanistic studies revealed that the relative resistance of KIT D816V-positive cells to TNF is mediated by the apoptosis regulator BIRC5, also known as survivin. Elevated expression of BIRC5 in neoplastic mast cells was confirmed by immunohistochemistry of cells from patients with systemic mastocytosis. Finally, analysis of human samples from a discovery cohort of 42 patients and a validation cohort of 142 patients revealed that TNF serum levels were significantly elevated in patients with systemic mastocytosis. Moreover, high TNF levels were identified as a biomarker of inferior survival. The authors concluded that their findings point to TNF as a KIT D816V-dependent cytokine that promotes clonal dominance in systemic mastocytosis by suppressing normal hematopoiesis. This implies that TNF and apoptosis-associated proteins could serve as potential therapeutic targets in systemic mastocytosis. In an accompanying commentary, Joachim Dahlin and Gunnar Nielsen from Karolinska Institute in Solna, Sweden, note that Greiner and collaborators demonstrate that aberrant mast cells with the KIT D816V mutation in systemic mastocytosis release TNF, which gives them a growth advantage compared to non-mutated myeloid cells and worsens the clinical outcomes for the patients. Dahlin and Nielsen hypothesize that KIT D816V mutant mast cells are likely promoting a TNF-rich microenvironment in which only the neoplastic clone thrives, and the growth of normal mast cells is suppressed. Over time, this would result in the complete takeover of mutant mast cells in the patients. The tryptase levels in systemic mastocytosis correlated weakly with the systemic TNF levels, which may indicate that cells other than mature mast cells contribute to the TNF-rich microenvironment that promotes neoplastic mast cell dominance. One possibility is that the acquisition of the KIT D816V mutation results in increased TNF-producing capacity, also in a non-mast cell population, and that these cells contribute to the TNF production in disease. Dahlin and Nielsen conclude that these findings represent a significant step toward understanding systemic mastocytosis on the cellular, molecular, and patient levels. Although it is presently unclear if and how TNF-targeting therapies could benefit patients with systemic mastocytosis, exploring such an approach in future studies may be plausible in light of these most recent findings. For a list of additional authors, as well as more detailed articles and commentaries on which this podcast is based, please go to bloodjournal.org. Be sure to join us next week for another episode of Blood Podcast. Thank you for listening.